Hello and welcome to The Property Exchange, your guide to the latest news, views and opinions in residential property, with Winkworth, with you every step of the way in the property market. Your host is writer and commentator Anne Ashworth.
Welcome to the Property Exchange podcast. This time, the outlook for the property market as spring draws nearer. In spring, people's thoughts traditionally turn to moving house. The days are longer and the spring flowers just make everything look better. But in 2026, will confidence be in short supply as buyers feel the pinch from higher taxes and the possibility of more tax rises to come? Last year, the markets in London and the South lagged the rest of the country. Will this be the pattern of 2026 as affordability continues to hold back the capital? Against this background, a mortgage price war is raging as lenders compete for business. We'll be looking into the deals on offer and whether they're attractive enough to get Britain moving again. And talking about those insights, I'm joined as usual by Dominic Agais, CEO of Winkworth, and by Anthony Emerson from mortgage brokers Trinity Financial. Dominic and Anthony, thanks for joining us. And first question to you, Dom. Could you sum up the state of the market so far as we kick off 2026? Are there green shoots in sight in time for spring? Or are geopolitical events and the squeeze on buyers' budgets from higher taxes dampening the mood?
So I think we started the year pretty positively. The last year was a bit of a roller coaster, as the years tend to be these days. But I feel that we've put a bit of a floor down on the property market. And, you know, we've had the readjustment last year. There were some things like the budget that got in the way and caused everyone to pause. And the costs had increased rapidly over previous years. But it feels like activity's up so far. I mean, the surveyors, the Royal Institute Chartered Surveyors, have come out and said that sort of a net 22% positive that prices will move forward and sales activity will increase in the next 3 months, going to 35%. The balance was 35% positive going to 12 when you look at 12 months. So the surveyors think that things are on the up. And when you look at the sort of conflation of the various views out there, you are looking at a general view that things are improving, and that will be supported by wage inflation still above inflation, interest rates coming down, which is means the mortgage rates are coming down slightly ahead of those cuts. So the environment is improving. So whilst, you know, we're not going to see huge gusto in the year, I think we're expecting an improved picture.
It's interesting to note that most experts are thinking that prices will rise on average this year by about 1% or even as much as 5%. So actually, the confidence is better. But where is that confidence? Is it in London or is it outside? Which locations are busiest?
So I think all three have arguments for them. I mean, when I say three, we look at the market in three different ways. We look at prime central London being a world to its own because of its international relationship with the international high net worth individuals. And then you have your sort of zones two outwards, which is your domestic London market. And then outside of that is a slightly different market again for sort of the country towns, driven again by the domestic market. So when you look at across all three, I think you saw, sadly, you saw the post-COVID boom of 20% price increases in the country markets as everyone raced for space come off. And, those houses that sort of 1 million in the country are back to where they were before that boom. So there's been a huge adjustment going on in the country markets. And that ultimately led to a sort of difficult transactional market last year in the country markets. Now that's through, then you're sort of back in line with more normal affordability trends for country houses. So I think there's reasons to be positive. And we found that balance perhaps between, are we all going to live in the country and never go to work, or are we going to be coming in every day? And it feels that settled into a pattern where we support the demand at the price point country houses are at. So that sort of matrix, really. So that's That's the country ones where I think there are reasons to be optimistic. You know, it's supported where their good links are still really important. Good schools are so important at the moment. In particular, you know, the big thing now is cost of school fees have gone up so much that can you access them by on a day basis? You know, if you want to do your private school education and you want to get into a big boarding school and they've gone away from you because they've added 20% to the cost, you know, they're now offering day rates. So if you move your house to the country, then, you know, you can get your children in at a far cheaper basis. So there's lots of good things there to support activity. You know, the zones 2 to 4 have been incredibly enduring. You know, they are needs-based. People are working in London with families that move to get extra rooms when they have a child or to be in the catchment area of the right school. And, you know, the prices have been treading water. They haven't been going anywhere, but it's been very resilient because it's just down to needs-based.
Is this the moment, if you've been putting off moving for a year or so because of uncertainty, because of mortgage rates, to start thinking, I could actually get the house of my dreams at a price that I could afford?
Absolutely. I mean, there's interesting conversations going on out there, which feeds into the, you know, when is the time? I mean, there's lots of properties available. If you look at central London, prices come off a huge amount. When is the time to sort of take advantage of the available properties out there, picking the one you love and getting it at the sort of the lowest ebb of the property market? And perhaps that time is soon. I mean, there's increasing discussions about, you know, if you look at the likes of areas like Chelsea, you know, where those prices are, in compared to a, you know, Battersea or Fulham, that gap's narrowed so much that you sort of feel, you know, a £5 million house in Chelsea could go to 7 million if the wind's behind it. You know, a house in Battersea or Fulham is probably going to go up 1 or 2%. So if you have a view that Labour are a one-term government and you believe that the reform will come in, whether it's Conservatives or a Reform Party, and change and be more wealth-friendly, then you think there might be an opportunity for those markets.
So buy before you see the light at the start of the tunnel.
Exactly. I think that becomes the conversation amongst certainly the international community I've been speaking to, you know, the bankers and private equity lot who are looking at where they're buying. They're beginning to think of it in that macro term, which is where are we in the election cycle and what comes next?
Now, let's talk about the mansion tax. It's going to be payable on houses worth £2 million or more from 2028. Is it a factor in central London?
Honestly, no. I think it's as good as it could have been. I mean, the worry is once you've got a foothold of a new tax, you know, where that goes, obviously. But as at the level it's set at this point in time, I think everyone sighed a huge sigh of relief. The thing ground to a halt, pending all sorts of scary stories of what was coming in terms of wealth taxes. But actually, it proved that in the end, it was more, you know, a significant amount of money, but very manageable, I think, for those at that price point.
Confidence returning. Any other key things happening in the market?
I think that what the properties people want, you know, they're, you know, people asked me to sell the other day and saying that, you know, the worst, hardest property to sell is sort of, you know, a one-bed flat that's not done up, but it's not a do-upper. You know, you're sort of caught between all of that. And so there's huge divisions between the types of properties that are getting priced. So best-in-class properties are selling at, you know, asking price, and you might get competitive bids, and that's fantastic. So there's sort of a two-tier market. But if you're not quite in that category, or you're a bit far from the station, or you're not in the school catchment, or your house is sort of done up, you have to redo it all to get it to the spec people want, then you know, those properties are struggling. So I think it's very specific, very price sensitive, and it's not a general mood of everything moving forward as one.
So if you're a seller, be realistic. Now, can you just name us some great locations now where things are kind of motoring?
So I think it's interesting to see that the old guard might be back in terms of the London, you know, obviously our area of great expertise in terms of the most offices we have. You know, West London perhaps has been a bit unloved with the trendy, the East London trend. And, you know, obviously there's been huge innovation, creativity, new restaurants, new buzz in those areas, and prices have grown, and that's where people wanted to go. Now, I think perhaps you see more value in West London, and so you're seeing a sort of reversion to the markets that have, you know, the established schools and established links in the parks and you know, were built by the Victorians as the more affluent area, perhaps, and people, you know, choosing those again.
So Fulham rather than Shoreditch?
I think so. I think that's perhaps the move at the moment. You know, those prices in Shoreditch have gone very, very high, and so I think you'll expect them to be digested over the years to come.
Thank you for that. And now mortgages, and over to you, Anthony. How many big names have cut their rates in the last few days? TSB, NatWest, Nationwide, Halifax Barclays, so many of them, in response to that base rate cut at the end of the year to 3.75%. Are you expecting the bank to cut again in the spring and so make mortgage deals even cheaper?
This month's announcement that the inflation rate has risen slightly has put a little bit of a dampener on what we would have hoped would have been an earlier cut. We've got the Bank of England base rate meetings on the 5th of February, probably the 19th of March and the 30th of April. Probably don't expect to see any sort of real significant cut in those meetings because of the fact that we've got these rising inflation figures. We've got geopolitical influence that is causing a little bit more fear as to what might come. So I don't think the bank is going to pull the trigger too early on that. Having said that, we had a bit of a swap rate spike just before Christmas. And then the weeks after Christmas, we've seen that sort of swap rate come right back down, which has led to all those cuts that you mentioned. So we've got all the big names cutting their rates. They're all fighting for market share because they've started the new year. They need to get their allocation for the year, and they try and be as competitive as they can straight off the gate. We've got lenders really trying to encourage first-time buyers into the market. You know, we've got 95% loan-to-value products starting at 4.55%, 90% products below 4%, and then, you know, all the way down to 60% loan-to-value products starting below 3.5%, which, you know, we haven't seen in a long, long time. And we've reached that point now where there is an inflection point where renting is probably a little bit more expensive than it is for you to buy if you're a younger person with a decent deposit and, you know, able to sort of take a long-term fixed rate, a long-term mortgage on a repayment basis. It'll probably be better for you to buy than it is for you to rent at the moment.
So deals looking really attractive because we're never going to go back to that near zero kind of level that we were post-COVID. Against this background, though, should you choose a fixed rate deal or a tracker?
That very much depends on the person. I mean, the trackers are very competitive at the moment. At 60% loan to value, they're as cheap as 3.89% at the moment, so sort of 0.14 over bank base. There are expected to be a cut, maybe two this year, therefore bringing those rates even further down. But it's just whether or not you've got the appetite for that extra level of risk. The people taking the tracker rates are people that are expecting to either sell in the near term, do a quick renovation, want to have a refinance and benefit from the uplift in the value. Those are the people that are on the trackers at the moment, and also the people who are a little bit more risk-based who want to really roll the dice on whether or not the interest rate cuts are going to come in. Having said that, rates as low as sort of 3.5%, some people are just saying, you know, I'm just going to fix in. We've still got two-year fixed rates cheaper than five-year fixed rates, not by a huge margin, but by enough to lead most people to go down the two-year fixed rates at the moment.
You're talking about appetite for risk, and I'd just like to get some kind of gauge on what it's like out there. Are people borrowing the maximum amount they can, maxing out, as they say, or are they being quite cautious?
I think we've still got an affordability issue where London prices are still quite high by comparison to the average income. And we are seeing the lenders react as well. We've got Nationwide announcing yesterday that they'll do 6x income, which will help a hell of a lot of first-time buyers get onto the market again. They have got certain restrictions as far as income requirements, £75,000 for a single applicant, £100,000 for joint. But if you've got £100,000 between a couple, you've got £600,000 worth of borrowing. And as I mentioned before, that inflection point where renting is quite expensive and the mortgage rates being as low as they are, it is now making more sense for people to go bite the bullet and get in there and just buy that property.
The message of what you're saying is, as I understand it, the lenders are open for business, and if the bank of mum and dad is also open for business to advance you a deposit, this is the time to get moving if you're a first-time buyer.
It is very much being targeted towards the first-time buyer, because without the first-time buyer, we don't see the ability for the rest of the market to take the next step. So we need to feed the bottom of the chain to be allow everybody else to step forward into something slightly bigger. And the lenders are doing everything they can to try and encourage that. The rates are lower, the affordability figures are higher. We've reached that inflection point, as I said. So things are looking positive.
Wow, what confidence. Guys, really thank you for your insights. A final question before we go. How much higher will house prices be before the end of the year?
So I don't think that one size fits all for the UK, but if you're going to average it out, I'm going to hedge my bets at an inflationary 3%.
And over to you.
I think if we encourage more first-time buyers into the market and we have the shift in the movement of people into houses that they should be in, I definitely think we are going to see more. So I think probably 3% would be about right.
Okay, 3%. We will remember that, guys. Dominic and Anthony, thank you so much for your insights and for joining us for this episode of The Property Exchange. Do subscribe and join us for next month's podcast.
This has been The Property Exchange podcast. For more information, go to winkworth.co.uk or find us on Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. The producer was Tom Maddox. For more episodes, make sure to subscribe to your favourite podcast provider.